Welcome to episode 21 of Kick the Puppy with Keith and RJ. And news for this week, Donald Trump gave his presidential State of the Union address this week. Apparently this State of the Union address had been postponed because of the government shutdown, and there was some controversy about that, and most people have probably heard about that, so no point in going to the into the backstory. But one of the probably the most entertaining aspects of the State of the Union address was that there was this kid named Joshua Trump, and apparently he's a middle schooler somewhere, and he had been bullied because of his last name, because he has the same last name as the president. So apparently a lot of anti-Trump kids were picking on him, and somehow the White House got word of this, and they actually invited this kid to the White House to Congress to sit there during Donald Trump's State of the Union address, and the kid apparently fell asleep during the State of the Union address, and of course now the anti-Trump people are hailing this kid as a hero because he fell asleep during the president's talk. I mean, probably the real issue is that it was late at night. This kid probably usually goes to bed by the time this kind of thing happens. But it was funny, though, because there was this picture that went viral with this kid just kind of laying out, crashed, while the president is talking, which I actually didn't watch the State of the Union address, and I rarely do. I usually don't watch them. I did catch a few excerpts of it on various YouTube channels and stuff like that, and it looked pretty ridiculous. For one thing, Trump's a terrible public speaker. I mean, the way he talks, he sounds like a guy from the mafia ordering a hit or something like that, or like a sixth grader running for president of his class or something like that. And then they had these constant disruptions during the speech. Apparently, like some of the ladies in Congress were all dressed in these white outfits. I think they were trying to commemorate the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage. It was 100 years ago this year that women got the right to vote in the United States. They passed a constitutional amendment. I forget which one, the 19th Amendment or something like that, that gave women voting rights. So apparently they were trying to commemorate that, but they kept getting up and dancing and acting silly during the course of the Trump speech. So the whole thing was just a big circus act, I mean, as it usually is. But it was interesting that this kid was falling asleep for the whole thing, which in many ways is appropriate. I mean, I guess he just wasn't paying attention and said, well, I'll just take a nap instead. So,
yeah, well, I have a hard time sitting through political speeches, too. I mean, I don't think I've ever actually sat through an entire political speech from any American, or for any leader, for that matter.
Well, they don't really say anything. I mean, it's just a lot of silly platitudes that are all pre-contrived.
Yeah, it's all the same thing. They sound the same. It's like about all the jobs that they're going to create and, you know, better days are coming and cut a ribbon or something, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they're all interchangeable. You could probably watch, say, some recent State of the Union speeches and turn back the clock and watch them from 25 years ago. They're probably saying a lot of the same shit.
Yeah.
So for those who didn't watch the State of the Union address, you didn't miss anything, I guess, is the lesson there. An interesting story coming from Acapulco. This is a story in the Daily Beast. We've talked about Acapulco a bit on the program before, but there's an expatriate community there. I mean, there are a lot of American expatriate communities in Mexico, but there's one in Acapulco that Jeff Berwick, who's a Canadian libertarian, kind of heads up. And there's a number of people there who are libertarians and who sort of started their own community in Acapulco, in the tourist area, and they have an Acapulco there every year. Like I actually went to the first couple of ones they had starting in 2015. I went to an Acapulco that year, and then I went the following year. I was actually a speaker there a couple of times. I haven't gone since because it's one of those things. Well, you know, already been there. What's the point? They keep continuing to go back. But it's a pretty big event. If you're into libertarianism, it's a big event. They have a lot of libertarian celebrities there that speak. Like I think this year they're going to have Ron Paul and people like that. And they also have people from outside the libertarian milieu. Like I think this year they're going to have David Icke there and Cynthia McKinney, who used to be in Congress. And I think she belongs to the Green Party now. So it's not just for libertarians. It's also got a lot of just anti-establishment politics generally, and a lot of counterculture type stuff and alternative lifestyle type stuff. Like if you're interested in bitcoins and all that kind of stuff, or if you're interested in, a lot of financial stuff. There's a lot of seminars on making money, and then you've got a lot of stuff on peaceful parenting. Like you've got a lot of people into this scene that don't believe in disciplining kids, free range parenting and things like that. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that goes on at these events. They're actually pretty cool. I've been on been to a couple of them, and they usually take place at a resort hotel, and they're interesting. It's a fun place to go on vacation. But anyway, there's this, libertarian community there, and there's these people that were staying there in the area. And apparently, a gunman invaded the house they were living in and shot a couple of them. One guy was killed, this guy that goes by the name John Galton. I don't think that's his real name. I think that's, based on, one of the characters in the Ayn Rand novel, which, a lot of libertarians are really big on Ayn Rand. I never liked Ayn Rand. It's interesting because of my interest in anti-state philosophies, I'm often asked what I think about Ayn Rand. I've been asked that for probably 25 years, and the short answer to that is not much. I never cared for her at all. But anyway, this kid, this John Galt guy, he was murdered in Acapulco, and apparently a gunman came into the house and shot him and killed him. And, his girlfriend, this girl named Lily, was there. I actually met these two, John and Lily, when I was in Acapulco, a few years ago. They had just gotten there, and they were actually fugitives from the United States. They were wanted on some kind of drug charge in the United States. I mean, I didn't really get to know them well or spend a lot of time with them, but I do remember meeting them. But they had a sketchy reputation, though, among the, expat community in Acapulco, like on a lot of the anarchapulco related social media forums, Facebook and all that. I used to see a lot of negative comments about these people, like about John and Lily, about they were, basically just users and kind of flaky. But anyway, it's obvious what they did, though. They went to Acapulco and got involved in the drug trade, which is not something you want to do in Mexico. I mean, apparently John was involved in the marijuana trade in Acapulco, which, I know when I was there, I had people from the expat community saying, don't get involved in illegal stuff here. It's dangerous. It's common sense. You don't go to Mexico and get involved in the drug trade.
Market's going to take care of everything.
Well, I guess it did.
It did.
But I always had a good time in Acapulco, though. I actually thought that was a pretty cool event. I'd actually recommend going to them if you've never been to one.
I've never been there. I mean, I've been to Acapulco, but personal leisure. I've never been to an Acapulco.
That's pretty cool. All right. Well, some legal news. Cody Wilson, of course, Cody Wilson was the CEO of Defense Distributed, and he's the guy that invented the 3D gun you can print out with a computer. And of course, a few months back, he got in some trouble with the law. He's been accused of sexual assault of a minor. And I think the story is the girl was actually a girl he met through an escort service online or something who apparently turned out to be 16 or 15 or whatever the age was. I don't know. So now Wilson is in trouble with the law. And of course, he stepped down from Defense Distributed and another person, Paloma Heindorf, is now the CEO. But apparently his indictment has gone through now. I mean, for those that don't know how the legal system works, that's how it goes. You get arrested and charged and arraigned, and then the charges go to a grand jury, and a grand jury will hand down the indictment. And then you've got to have pretrial motions and then a trial and just a process that you go through. We've talked about this before, I think, as well, but it seems like Cody Wilson's case is just a classic, almost like a classic honey trap, a honey pot situation. I mean, it seems like to me Wilson had every reason to believe that this girl was over the age of consent. Because if he was finding her from one of these online escort sites or whatever, those typically mandate that their participants be over, I don't use them myself, so I don't know, but what I've always heard, they mandate that the participants be over the age of consent. So I don't know what happened here. I don't know if this girl was just, lying about her age and working for an escort service and pretending to be older than she was, or if she was a plant, you know, she could have been some kind of plant that they used to try to entrap Wilson, because he's such an obvious target for something like that. I mean, he's the kind of guy that the system would be afraid of, you know, a guy that's actually invented a means by which you can pretty much just make your own guns.
Well, he put the design documents online that he owned the IP for.
Yeah, so.
So they were worried about him building some kind of 3D gun printing cult up around him, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is the kind of guy they'd want to get rid of, you know, that would become a target for something like that. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how this plays out in the courts. Well, there's been some interesting political scandals or controversy or whatever you want to call it going on in my own home state of Virginia. Apparently, for those that haven't been following this, the governor, we have a Democratic governor, this guy named Ralph Northam. He's a physician. But apparently somebody unearthed a picture of him wearing blackface and standing next to somebody dressed in a Klan robe, but it wasn't an actual Klan meeting or anything like that. It was some kind of fraternity party or something when the guy was in college. And this was like 40 years ago. I think this was around 1980 or something like that. The guy went to the University of Virginia, which is a big, elite college here in Virginia. It's in Charlottesville where all the fun happened between the alt-right and the Antifa a couple years ago. But it's actually a college that was started by Thomas Jefferson. It's a really prominent college. But this came to light that, you know, 40 years ago or whatever, this governor we have, he went to a party dressed in blackface and, you know, I don't know what it was, a Klan thing party, who knows what it was, some crazy college shit. But they do have a picture of him with some dude in Klan robes, but it's actually like a party or something, like a frat party or some weird shit. But anyway, so of course a lot of people are calling for this guy to resign. Right before this happened, he had already pissed off a lot of people from the conservative side of the fence because he's big on abortion, and he had apparently wanted to sign a law into practice allowing late term abortion or something like that. So he pissed off a lot of the pro-life type people. But according to this article from the local media here, there was some person that was upset by his views on abortion that somehow found this photo of him in blackface or whatever and leaked it to the press. But what's funny now is that that's unleashed a whole wave of events. Like the lieutenant governor is a black guy, this guy named Justin Fairfax. And now he's in trouble for charges of sexual assault or sexual harassment or something like that. It's all this Me Too type of stuff, you know, whatever's going on with him. So now there's talk in the state legislature about trying to impeach the lieutenant governor. So they're already calling for the governor to resign. And now they're talking about impeaching the lieutenant governor. And then the attorney general, who is the, also a Democrat. I mean, they're all Democrats. He apparently was photographed in blackface or something at one point. And now it came out that a prominent person who's a Republican in the state legislature, apparently they've got a photograph of him wearing blackface. So apparently at some point that was popular, wearing blackface or whatever. Yeah, I knew what blackface was, but I mean, I always thought it was something they used to do in minstrel shows and stuff like that in the early 20th century, like vaudeville and that kind of thing. So there's this whole unraveling process that's happening where the state government is in chaos because all these prominent officials have been accused of sexual assault or photographed in blackface. So we'll see how that pans out.
Yeah, meanwhile, all the tech elites are posing in pictures with the Saudi crown prince, which is a real picture, and nobody cares.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a guy that actually orders a journalist to be assassinated and cuts people's heads off and invades other countries and starves whole populations to death and stuff like that. Well, some more medical news. A veterinarian was stitching packets of heroin into the bodies of puppets and using them as drug mules. That's pretty creative, actually. I mean, if you're going to have a drug mule, I guess you need to use a puppy. Who would suspect a puppy? And if you're a vet, you know how to stitch a packet of heroin into the puppy's, insides or whatever. So I wonder how the guy got caught. I guess they, would have a drug dog sniffing out the dogs?
I guess they turned one of these puppies into a drug dog now.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I hate drug dogs. Drug dogs are such a joke. I mean, the cops use them as like props. Like, it's like a prop at the scene, you know, because they're going to search your car regardless. But they need a dog just to make any sort of movement so they can get the whole, you know, get out of your Fourth Amendment card and just search you. That's what the dogs are for. I mean, they could train rats to do it. The dogs don't actually detect drugs. They just, the dog could fart and the cops would be like, yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
You know, do you remember the case? There was a federal appeals court ruling. I don't remember the guy's name. It was like Benji, where they ruled that basically a drug dog that's barely more accurate than a coin flip is technically a good drug dog.
Yeah, I've heard that drug dogs are actually not that reliable.
It's just a useful tool to make the searches legal. It's the humans. The cop is what's good at figuring out whether or not someone looks shady and might actually have drugs. But the law doesn't let them just act on it. They can't just go around searching people. So they've established for themselves a sniffer dog, which doesn't actually do anything in terms of having the ability to detect drugs. But it's very useful as a tool for like a base of action to be like, okay, now, you know, we're going to act on what we think is going on. So it's actually backwards. Boy, I hate drug dogs. Someone told me that we talk about dogs too much on this show.
Well,
it's called Kick the Puppy. You know?
Right, exactly. I mean, plus a lot of people like dogs. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, some more political prisoner views. There's an interesting article from The Guardian that was aired recently about former Black Panthers that are still in prison. Some of these guys have been in prison since the 60s and 70s. They're old men now. But it's interesting to think about this because the Black Panthers really were a subversive revolutionary group in the United States during that time, during the Vietnam War era. J. Edgar Hoover, who was the head of the FBI at the time, said they were the biggest subversive force in the United States at the time. And really there hasn't been anything that was that subversive, I think, since then. Maybe some of these militia people like, these Tim McVeigh types and stuff that came along in the 90s. Well, they also, back in the 80s, there were some neo-Nazis that were robbing armored cars and stuff like that to order. But the Black Panthers were a large group. I think at their peak, they had something like 5,000 members. And they were a fairly large army. They had chapters spread out in a lot of different cities. But it's interesting to study what actually happened to the Black Panthers because it shows what happens when the government thinks you really are a threat. I mean, the state moved in to wipe these people out. There were constant shootouts between the police and the Black Panthers, both local police, municipal police, and the feds. In fact, a number of Panther leaders were assassinated in joint operations by the feds and local police. A lot of them were framed on all kinds of charges. Some of them went to jail for actual charges because the Panthers were also, some of them were into, raising funds to bank robbery and stuff like that too. So it's an interesting, story if you ever get the chance to really look into the Black Panthers. They were a really interesting group.
Kind of an interesting model in terms of like a private voluntary police force against the state.
Yeah. Well, and that's why the wrath of the state came down on them so hard. The state doesn't want any competition. Yeah, but some of these guys are still in, decades later.
There's these new Black Panther people in Vegas. They're all over the place. They post all these flyers on the telephone poles in my area, and they ride around on bikes in all black tactical guerrilla gear. And they have, on the postings, they have like a phone number, and then they have an address, and they say open meetings. And I guess I don't know what they're like. I've never been. Maybe I should show up with black face paint and record one of the meetings.
Yeah, well, they've been disavowed though by the surviving members of the original party. Like the new Black Panthers of the group you're talking about. And they're more like a racist group, like a black supremacist or something like that.
Yeah, but they're not very nice people, yeah.
Yeah, well, I know people who worked with them before and say, yeah, they're assholes. But the original Black Panthers were not a racist group, like a black supremacist group. I mean, they actually created affiliate groups for people of other ethnic backgrounds. They had, including whites, including, white rednecks from Appalachia and all kinds of stuff. I mean, they had a pretty elaborate operation at one point, which again, that's why the state came down on them like they did.
Yeah.
All right. Some more news of the weird. Case in the Smoky Mountains. That's actually in North Carolina, the Smoky Mountains, where a man apparently died of a meth overdose. And then the bear, ate his body. But apparently they killed the poor bear because they thought that the bear had killed the man. So they thought the bear was dangerous. But it turned out that man had actually died of a meth overdose. And then the bear ate him.
How do you die of meth?
Yeah, I
like,
don't know.
You can smoke so much meth and not die. Like, you get, like, they have what's called a quag, like a bong. Like, you know, when you smoke weed, you can smoke out of a bong to get a bigger hit. They have the same thing for a quag, where you can take like 20 hits from a huge quag and walk outside high as fuck. You could be awake for days. You could be like on day 5 walking dead and not die. I mean, you might have like a psychological overdose or go into psychosis and kill someone, but you're not going to die. I mean, you could shoot dope. You could slam dope. I mean, it might make you cough and taste like fuel, but it's like, how do you die? In Hawaii, everybody shoots dope. In Hawaii, meth is so expensive in Hawaii. It's like prison prices. Like in prison, they call it a paper. And it's $100 for a paper. In like Las Vegas, like that would be like a gram. Out in Hawaii, like in Las Vegas, you get a gram, you get like a gram and a half for like $30, like a teener. In Hawaii, people are so poor and everything's so expensive that everybody just shoots dope. But it's like I've never heard of anyone dying from meth, so I don't know if it just sounds really weird. The story sounds really weird.
Yeah, I thought it sounded weird too. In fact, I was thinking that they weren't telling the whole story. You know, I mean, unless the guy died of something else. I mean, he could have been doing opioids and meth, or maybe he just had a heart attack or something like that. But
yeah, that's possible.
Yeah, but I've never heard of anybody actually dying from a meth overdose. I mean, it's usually opioids are what people die from, you know. Or
yeah, the opioids put you to sleep. They suppress your respiratory system and just you nod out and you just don't wake up. So this bear was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, basically.
Victim of circumstances. Yeah. Some medical news. A Colorado woman dies after 2 kidneys were mistakenly removed. There are some seriously incompetent doctors out there. Obviously what was going on here is that the medical staff just wasn't paying any attention to what they were doing, because in places – medical facilities that are competent, they have a lot of built-in safeguards to prevent these kinds of things. Like, I had knee surgery a couple of years ago. In fact, it was 2 years ago this month I had a torn meniscus. But I know when I went in for surgery, like the first thing is you go in and there's the intake nurse and she goes over all your information and all this kind of stuff. And she already has it. I mean, it's not like you're just getting it for the first time. You've already had to go online and fill out forms. You've already met with the doctors and they've compiled your information. And then she reviews your information to make sure everything is right. And they go over everything, like, what you're allergic to, what kind of medications you're taking, your whole medical history. And then when I went to for the surgery, I went through the whole process again, not with not one, but 2 nurses. There were 2 prep nurses that went through the whole thing that I just went through with the intake nurse. Right? Then the OR nurse came and went through all the same stuff yet again. Right? Then the, anesthesiologist assistant came in and asked me a whole bunch of questions. Then the physician assistant came in and asked me a whole bunch of questions. Then the anesthesiologist himself came in. Then the surgeon himself came in. You know, so I mean, I had like 10 people go, you know, in a space of, you know, 30 minutes, go through all these protocols and all the different information. And that's what they're doing. They're trying to make sure they get everything right. You know, they verified and confirmed to the letter, you know, exactly what my health issues are and all that kind of stuff, you know. So, I mean, they had a really elaborate set of protocols to prevent these kinds of mistakes. So what this really says is that the doctors and medical personnel running this clinic or whatever it was were incompetent. They weren't paying attention.
Yeah, you know, my mom's a nurse, and she used to tell me all kinds of stories about incompetent doctors, you know, doing things like reusing insulin pens, colonoscopy bags, not washing equipment, you know, they lose records every few years, And you know, and as a former medic, I know a bunch of people who transport to certain hospitals constantly. They know every hospital like the back of their hands, and they'll say things like, you know, I'll never go to that hospital. I'll never be treated at that hospital. These doctors are ridiculous. So it's true. There are a lot of incompetent doctors.
Yeah. And then there's also fake doctors. There was a case in Florida a while back of some guy that didn't even have a medical license that was doing cosmetic surgery, like breast enhancements and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of weird doctors. There was a case in Florida where there was a doctor that was like hypnotizing women and then sexually assaulting them when they were under hypnosis.
Oh yeah. I've heard of a number of cases that like involving weird stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess shop around, make sure you have a competent doctor if you go in for surgery.
Yeah.
Right, some more drug news, and this is in North Carolina. Eight children were taken to the hospital after eating marijuana-laced gummy bears. Well, that doesn't mean that that's going to hurt them any. They'll just be kind of spaced out for a while. I guess if they've never experienced any being under the influence, it would be kind of trippy for them. But that's not really something that's going to kill somebody or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they were just freaking out. The edibles are like a different kind of – when you eat weed, it's like a different feeling. It has a different effect on it. It's not like when you smoke weed, you could be smoking weed and talking to somebody, and as you're talking, you're just like, wow, I'm high. Like it just kicks in within seconds when you smoke weed. But with the edibles and stuff, it's like a half hour could go by and you don't feel anything. And then all of a sudden it just kicks in and your body feels weird.
Yeah, or they just got a paranoid buzz or whatever.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, there's actually a book that's out now. There was an article about it in Rolling Stone critiquing it. But it's this silly book. It's like this anti-marijuana book. It's called Tell Your Children. Or something like that. But there's this guy who's just a fiction writer. I mean, he's not even an actual scientist or medical researcher or anything like that. This guy is a fiction writer. He wrote this book all about the evils of weed, you know, about how it makes people violent, it makes you turn schizophrenic and stuff like that. And this stuff is actually this book has actually been circulated lately, you know, because now that marijuana is being legalized and decriminalized in a lot of places, you know, there's sort of a backlash against that. Like, I guess the anti-weed people or whatever, they're trying to hold their position or whatever. So, but this book has been getting a big circulation among that crowd. But it's just the same old thing. It's the same shit I used to hear back in the 70s and 80s. I used to hear back then that smoking pot would cause you to be schizophrenic, or they used to say smoking pot would turn you gay. I used to actually hear that back in the day. But this shit is like straight out of Reefer Madness, like the old Reefer Madness movie from the 30s, you know, where like, pot turns you into a homicidal maniac. But anyway, there was an interesting critique of this book in Rolling Stone where they were talking about, you know, how this guy is actually misrepresenting a lot of the studies and research that he claims as sources, and the people who've actually did the original studies are distancing themselves from this guy. Like the big one is like, that marijuana causes you to be schizophrenic. I mean, schizophrenic people use drugs heavily because they're mentally ill. I mean, they use all kinds of drugs. They smoke more, they drink more, you know, I mean, it's just how it is. Another thing they claim, the guy claims is that that wherever they have the marijuana dispensaries now, there's been an excess of violence, you know, like a crack house or something like that. But what they're actually saying is that the cases involve combat between illegal drug dealers, you know, it's not the dispensaries per se. It's interesting how people are still pushing the whole Reefer Madness line even today.
Well, they used to say that smoking weed lowered your sperm count. And now this week there was a thing that just came out saying that people who smoke weed have a higher sperm count.
they used to say that. Well, they used to say, I used to hear that years ago too, and you know, decades ago. I mean, I haven't really been into smoking weed for years. I mean, I have like 25 years basically. Nowadays it doesn't even do anything for me. I just get a paranoid buzz. That's about it.
Yeah, me too. I don't really like to smoke weed.
Yeah, I never cared. I haven't cared much for it for a long time. I used to be a big pothead when I was young. I mean, you know, that was decades ago, but, Yeah, but so I mean, nowadays though, I mean they are making it legal a lot of places, and you know, apparently some people are getting upset about that. They're trying to hold the prohibitionist ground.
Yeah, but you got to wonder, you know, at the same time, for years we've had all these studies that were probably very biased in the sense that, you know, they were created as an anti-weed thing in an anti-weed society. But now that it's being reversed, you know, what we think are the real new studies, debunking all the old studies, like all the old bad science, it's like, is this really all going to be good science and legitimate discoveries now, debunking the old science? Or maybe now that there's so much money to be made in the weed industry, we're gonna get a bunch of new bad science from the other side now about how, you know, there aren't any risks involved in smoking weed because now it's a big money-making operation, kind of like how they do with Fed dope and a lot of legal drugs coming out of Big Pharma. You got to wonder, because like that sperm count article that came out, you know, it was saying that the men with higher sperm concentrations just have more testosterone in their bodies. And so the article was suggesting that maybe they just smoke marijuana because they're willing to take more risks. But then it's like at the same time, the same side is saying that, you know, we're starting to see that marijuana never had the risk profile that, you know, all the anti-weed alarmist people have always claimed. So it's kind of like anything that comes out about health and marijuana, it's like I don't really believe any of it.
Well, the stuff you're talking about is already happening. Like, I see all kinds of articles on social media now coming from all kinds of fringe websites and that kind of stuff, where they claim, you know, marijuana cures virtually every disease there is. You know,
yeah.
Marijuana cures cancer, it cures Parkinson's disease, it cures AIDS.
Glaucoma.
I've seen all kinds of weird stuff like that. So yeah, I think you're totally right. You know, they'll go from saying that marijuana causes you to become an axe murderer to saying, you know, marijuana will, you know, boost your IQ 50 points and, you know, and make you immune to all disease. You know,
yeah.
It's like, it's more animal news. A frozen cat covered in ice was revived after being found in a snowbank. So I guess they really do have nine lives.
It's a lucky cat. Yeah, this doesn't really surprise me though. One of the things you learn in EMS is that if you get a call, if there's like a submersion injury, meaning a drowning or something like that, and the water's cold, if the water is at a certain temperature, I don't remember the exact temperature, probably like around 20 degrees or something, it preserves the organs. And so like a person could be brought back to life even if they've been dead for like an hour. That's why they have that saying, you know, you're not dead until you're dead and warm.
Well, that sounds almost like cryonics or whatever they call that. What's that thing where they try to freeze the bodies of dead people? And
cryogenics, where they think they're going to be able to,
Yeah, like in the future after medical technology advances far enough, they'll revive them, they'll repair their injuries or something.
Yeah, that Simon guy from American Idol, he's paying to have his head frozen when he dies.
Yeah, it seems kind of crank, but I mean, there are people that are into that. Been talking about facial recognition technology, and some more news about that. There's a school district that has a security upgrade now where they want to start using facial recognition to track IDs and track AR-15s. Interesting.
China has stuff like this where they have weird smart campuses where kids are scanned in the classrooms like every 60 seconds for IDs, and then they record their facial expressions and they categorize them into like happy, angry, scared categories and things like that. And then they track what they're doing, like the students are reading or writing, cheating or falling asleep and stuff like that. India too. India came out years ago. Said there was a press report talking about how they want to be able to biometrically identify all of its 1 billion citizens. But China's more dystopian about it. Like, China thinks they're going to, like, predict crime using biometrics in a super surveillance state, like, to study everyone at an early age. China's something else.
Yeah, well, in China, they have their, what do they call it, their social credit system.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you can, you know, they go by how good a citizen you are based on everything from your credit card purchases to your, you know, internet viewing habits or whatever. And they can sanction you if they don't think you're a good enough citizen. Yeah, the Chinese culture has always been very authoritarian. I mean, the Confucian tradition that all of that is based on is kind of like that. Some more school news. Schools in England have introduced a new subject called mindfulness. There's an article from the New York Times about this. mindfulness. It would be interesting just to have a class on mindfulness.
No, it wouldn't. I hate this word mindfulness. Like, what does mindful even mean? Like, could you imagine what these kids are going to be doing? Like, what'd you do in school today? Started with the feelings check-in, and then we went around and did positive affirmations for ourselves, and then we went around and did positive affirmations for the person sitting next to us, and then we discussed what we had for breakfast because mind and body are important to being mindful, and then we checked off the items from our mindful list, and then we went to lunch. I mean, could you imagine? Like, this is the biggest bullshit ever. That's not a subject. You shouldn't be learning about mindfulness in school.
I used to work in a psychiatric hospital some years ago, like in the early 90s, and some of their group therapy sessions and stuff like that. That's the kind of shit they'd have in that. It's almost like this weird new age cult shit, you know,
yeah.
Meditate and all that.
I had to do that shit. They literally make you do a feelings check-in. They give you like a piece of paper, and on the piece of paper, they have all these faces, like smiley faces, angry face, confused face, and then they have words for them. And then they'll say, what are you feeling today? I swear to God, what are you feeling today? And then you have to pick a feeling, and then they tell you to process your feelings with the group. I swear to God, this really happens. And they think that this helps you. They really think this helps you. And they're going to be doing this in a school.
Yeah, well, you know, when I was in college, my first round of undergraduate school, I was initially a psych major, and I worked in a psychiatric facility for a while, and that's one of the reasons why I left that line of work is because I just got tired of all this Jim Jones crap.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, forget this. I'm not going to participate in this. I've actually seen a lot of activist-type groups, like left-type activist groups use this kind of stuff, you know, and night meetings and that kind of stuff. It's, you know, weird, you know, feel your way out of oppression or whatever crap.
Yeah, it's all bullshit. You know, it's like, I don't want to change the way I feel about my problems. It's just bullshit.
Well, England is a pretty dystopian place anyway. Like, I saw an article from Britain yesterday about how a woman was arrested for calling a transgender person a man rather than a woman or something.
Wow.
like hate speech or whatever.
Yeah. You
know, some more European news. A German town votes no to street addresses.
Well, I'm sure they'll have some. See, this is the kind of weird stuff that I think we'd see under like a decentralized system of decentralized systems, like a panarchy. You might have a town that decides to just get rid of street names and identify as numbers, as like a numbered neighborhood or something like that. You know, you might have little weird left-wing tech communities or something that just, you know, they don't have any address at all. Maybe they'll have some kind of like domain name system or you might have like a paranoid privacy community that, you know, wants their streets to be a secret. And so they use like Wi-Fi type network names or publicly visible names or host names or something like that that doesn't reveal where they really live. And then they have like some kind of back end work that keeps them safe from the public. And then you might have, you know, other neighborhoods with traditional street addresses, or you might have some people with X codes or something like this. But yeah, that's actually kind of cool. I mean, it's their town. They should let them do what they want. Yeah.
Yeah. Make it as weird as you want.
Exactly.
Well, you know, I used to know a guy years ago that he wanted to have an intentional community where everything is only open, like businesses and stuff are only open at night during the dark hours. You know, and everybody sleeps during the day. So night and day are totally reversed. Everybody sleeps during the day, and then everything is going on all night, you know, business, daily life.
Well, so he's never been to Las Vegas, obviously.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, this guy was really into, like, the occult and satanic stuff and black magic and all that. You know, I think that was part of the aesthetic, you know, everything's got to be dark.
Yeah.
We were talking about cannabis smoking associated with higher sperm count. Apparently, there's an article from Bloomberg about this. Yeah, that is interesting. I guess they did. I remember they did used to say that about how, you know, smoke too much weed, you won't be able to have kids and stuff like that. I used to hear that when I was young, too. I used to actually know guys that believed that, and they think, well, you know, who cares about using rubbers or whatever because you can't knock anybody up. So, and then they would.
Yeah, but it can't be possible. Black people like to smoke weed, and black people have no issue reproducing.
Well, now, I actually saw an article yesterday saying fertility rates among the minorities are actually falling, though.
I think fertility rates are falling across the board.
Yeah. In the developed countries, yeah.
Yeah.
Looks like we've got a lot of animal news this week. The El Paso Zoo will feed animals cockroaches named after your ex on Valentine's Day. That's a marketing gimmick there. I mean, that's a hell of a marketing gimmick. You know, it's, I used to work in marketing, and yeah, you're always trying to think of all kinds of crazy ways to market products and stuff like that. Particularly when I was in multi-level marketing. I mean, that stuff really gets crazy, but I mean, I've worked in conventional marketing as well. But yeah, this is a great marketing gimmick, whoever came up with this. Yeah, we will feed animals cockroaches named after your ex on Valentine's Day. That's great.
Yeah, so I guess if you got a friend who's, I don't know, I feel like, I mean, me personally, I don't hate any of my exes. Like, this is almost like some kind of weird voodoo thing. Like,
well, some people do.
Well, I feel like, you know, you're supposed to get someone new and then get over your ex. Like, when you're with someone new, you shouldn't really be worried about the past. You're, like, kind of on to new things. But so if you have, like, 9 cockroaches named after 9 exes, you probably got a lot of shit to work out, you know?
Yeah, right. It's got some issues there.
Yeah.
Well, I used to know a guy that had a tattoo on his arm. He actually had his wife's picture tattooed on his bicep. And he had an axe being stuck in her head, you know, like die, bitch, die, or something like that. This is a dude from the Invaders Motorcycle Club that had that. But from the New York Times again, there's an article called Living Alone Can Be Deadly. And it talks about how there's a higher mortality rate among people who live alone. But what I wonder about is, well, if people live alone and they have health problems, it could be there's nobody there to call the doctor. You know, call the ambulance. Like if somebody's living alone and they're choking or they're having a heart attack or, you know, they faint or something like that, there's nobody to call the paramedics or the EMS.
You know what was interesting about this? I'm pulling it up right now. Hang on. I read everything that comes out from the New York Times. I think the New York Times is the best American paper. Hang on.
But Abby Hoffman said it was the voice of the ruling class.
Oh, yeah. I mean, every American paper is the voice of the ruling class. All right. This is from the article. This is interesting. Living alone was not associated with dying prematurely for those in the highest socioeconomic group. I'm going to say that again. Living alone was not associated with dying prematurely for those in the highest socioeconomic group. The 19% of study participants who had a university degree or worked in an executive position. But for the rest, the lower the socioeconomic status, the higher the risk for death. The authors emphasize that the remaining 81% of the population was not deprived or living in poverty, but consisted mainly of middle class and skilled and unskilled workers. Unquote. So socioeconomic class, in other words, how poor you are brings down life expectancy even if you're a loner. So even when it comes to loners, the rich still live longer.
Yeah, well, we talked about that in some previous episodes about how the life expectancy rate is declining in the United States, but only for people on the lower socioeconomic levels. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the signs that you have a society that's going backwards is when life expectancy rates start to decline. Well, it's like nowadays we hear so much about how the economy is supposed to have improved and all of that. It's like, I don't see it. Where is it? You know, the real wages are still stagnant. Living costs, housing costs keep going up. The number of homeless people keeps going up.
Number of drug overdoses keep going up. Yeah, it's that slow economic decline process that we were talking about the other day.
Yeah, like we were saying, how it's just going to get to the point where, well, more and more people live like they do in the third world. They don't have electricity or running water, you know.
Yeah, but it's the frog in the pot. It's not the quick it's not the quick collapse. It's not the instant you wake up and everything looks like it looks like Mexico City. That's not what it is. It's this slow decline where people are just becoming more and more acclimated to being poorer and poorer. And then next thing you know, there's just tent cities everywhere. And it's just this slow process of the economic decline. And then you have the people on the left who, you know, who say, no, we're going to see climate collapse first. We're going to have the ecosystem's going to collapse first. And it's like, no, it's not. It's a slow economic decline, but not that slow. Then you have people on the right who benefit from it, like the Alex Jones people who will sell you, you know, the seeds that you need, the water purification system, because they can actually show you proof of this decline. It is very real. And so you just have the slow decline. That's just.
Yeah, well, that's how it's going to happen. I mean, it's already like that in some places, you know, like, like all that stuff that was going on in Flint, Michigan a while back with the poison drinking water and all that. I mean, that's how it is in underdeveloped societies, you know, in early industrial societies. That's the kind of stuff that goes on there. And you were talking about the tent cities. Yeah, those are becoming more and more common, you know, everywhere, particularly places that have a high cost of living like the West Coast.
Yeah, even in places that don't have a high cost of living, I mean, there's tent cities everywhere in my city. Like, everywhere you go, there's homeless people everywhere.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a railroad track that there's a bridge that passes over a railroad track that is on the street that is that I go on. I use every day to go to one of the places where I work. And there are homeless people that camp out along the railroad track. I mean, I can look over the bridge on the railroad track and see alongside the railroad track where people have been camping out overnight and stuff like that.
Yeah. In Reno, there's no middle class whatsoever. You're either doing well and you live in South Reno by the cattle belt where it's very country but wealthy at the same time, or you're basically homeless. The whole rest of the city's like shot the fuck out and totally homeless. In Vegas, they contain the homelessness in certain areas. Like you could sleep on the sidewalk on Charleston and 4th Street, no problem. Cops let you can set up a blanket, a radio, and just sleep out on the sidewalk. The homeless people everywhere. But as soon as you cross Las Vegas Boulevard over into the west side where the medical district is, UMC, they'll either pick you up, take you to jail, or they'll knock you back over into the east side. And then if you go too far east, like past Maryland, they'll knock you back over into the homeless park. So they it's almost like they want to contain the smell and the sight of all the homelessness in that area.
Well, that's how it is here, too. Like in Richmond, there's a river that goes right through the middle of the city, the James River. And on the northern side of it, of the river, the northern and western side, like the western region is where you have the more affluent sectors of the city, and then somewhat in the northern side, depending on where you are. And that's where the big state university is as well, which is like a big 32,000 student state university. So that area has like a little college town flavor to it. And then you've got these more affluent areas and wealthy areas that are for a little bit further out to the west and parts of the north, depending on where you are. But then if you go to the east side of the city, or you go to the south side on the other side of the city, then that's where you find all the, like, you know, stereotypical trailer park, ghetto, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Yeah, and one thing that I've noticed is that for people that get arrested for crimes, they don't hand down quite as harsh a sentence if you get arrested and commit a crime on the south side as you do on the north side of the city. Like, they have separate court systems for the south side and the north side. And typically, if you get arrested on the south side for shoplifting or something like that, fighting in public or whatever, they don't really give a shit. But on the north side, they do.
It's the same way here. Yeah, and then in some instances it's so bad that it's difficult to prevent the spillover. Like, you'll have a multi-million, a billion-dollar corporation like the Stratosphere Hotel. You have this huge casino with all this wealth, and then you can walk outside, literally make a left, and there's just homeless people everywhere. There's a whole area behind there called Naked City, where literally people are running through the street naked, and it's right next to the wealth. It's like they can't even stop it from spilling over in some cases.
Yeah, well, the way you're describing Vegas, it sounds just like Latin American cities that I've been to. That's exactly how it sounds.
How it feels.
It's not quite that extreme here on the East Coast, but I know what it probably is in some places. I don't know how it is, but yeah. Okay, well, I guess that's about it. We've been going at this for a while now. So this has been episode 21 of Kick the Puppy with Keith and RJ on February 10th, 2019. Later.
High-heeled lady spitting at the Nicky Jacks. Businessman with a needle and a spoon. Coyote chewing on a cigarette. Pack of young boys going howling at the moon. Hey, darling, sleeping on the blacktop. Hey, darling, running through the trees, honey. Hey, darling, leaving for the next town. Lesson my sense catches up with me. Tastes sweeter in this town. Could it be it's the same as the last? I swear I've seen your face elsewhere before, just as familiar as a bottle and a glass. Hey, darling, sleeping on the blacktop. Hey, darling, running through the trees, honey.